So tonight's class is Tonight's class is titled "The Mitzvah of Timely Compensation." So we're making a transition from the mitzvot of Chesed to the mitzvah to other mitzvot that relate to the way we interact with other people. So not necessarily mitzvot of Chesed. We spoke about welcoming guests into our home. We spoke about the mitzvah of Hachnasas Kala, and we spoke about the mitzvah of visiting the sick. That was last week. That's a Chesed compartment. We're moving on now to, if you will, the second unit, the second section, is the mitzvah of mitzvot bein adam l'chaveiro, mitzvot that relate to the way we interact with other people and our obligations toward Hashem and other, and vis-a-vis other people. Okay? Try not to. I want to face everybody over here. Makes it difficult, but
that's okay.
I'll try.
I'm staring.
Okay. But I think it's important. The reason I'm making that transition now in this way is I'd like to address the actual transition first, and I think that's an important point to discuss. And that is, there is a connection between the mitzvos of Chesed and maybe an obvious connection, but even more an inner connection between the mitzvos of Chesed, of kindness to others, and the mitzvos of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, the mitzvos of between one person and their fellow. And obviously the connection is simple. I mean, it's not just between you and Hashem. So that's a plain connection. But I want to touch on a different point, which is quite important in actually even understanding our mitzvah tonight. So that is the following. You know, if I were to ask you which parsha in the Torah lists the most mitzvos that relate to between man and his fellow man, which parsha is that? Just asking you, is it? Which parsha would it be?
Vayikra.
It's in Sefer Vayikra. Which parsha is it? Well-known parsha.
19.
It's parshas, right. It's parshas Kedoshim. Parsha Kedoshim, right, the top of there. Vayikra 19. It is from this parsha. It's Parshas Kedoshim. So that's a fascinating parsha. I want to kind of characterize that parsha, and then we'll understand an interconnection between those mitzvos that relate between one person and their fellow, and the mitzvos of Chesed. It's unusual. Kedoshim means God instructs the Jewish people, become a holy people. And there's a whole list of maybe 50 mitzvos in that parsha that speak about how to relate to another person. But if you look closely at those mitzvos, many of them relate to that, to how to treat another person in business. We know the famous mitzvah about Ahavta Rehacha Kamocha, love your fellow as you love yourself. Not to hate another person in your heart, not to put a stumbling block before the blind. All kinds of mitzvot that we're really familiar with come from this parsha. But if you look closely and you try to think about the contents of the mitzvot all typify subtleties that are not blatant. These are things that are subtle, like hating your fellow in your heart, or loving your fellow as you love yourself, or not putting the stumbling block before the blind, not counseling someone wrongly. Right? These are all very unique refinements of, you know, straight out social law. You know, it's not, for example, Parashat Mishpatim, you know, in Sefer Shmos, where it says, like, you know, if two people get into a fight, one punches the other, then he has to compensate him for five things, you know, or you know, if your property damages my property, you know, it's not straight up coarse legal statutes, mishpatim. It's not mishpatim. It's kedoshim. Kedoshim means they're laws of holiness. What makes Parshas Kedoshim unique, and the message, and I encourage you, you get a chance, open up Parshas Kedoshim, and you'll notice that the overwhelming theme is be holy unto Hashem, and fear Hashem, and I am Hashem your God. These themes of the repetition, Ani Hashem, V'yareita Melokecha, and you should fear Hashem your God, because I am Hashem. All these repetitions of all these sort of all these mitzvos, they all relate to fear of Hashem. That means, what does that mean? That means to go from being just a functional person in society who's not getting into trouble, you know, who's not sitting in jail most of his life, who's not damaging other people, insulting, injuring other people. There's another level beyond Mishpatim that's called Kedoshim. And that second level goes beyond, it's beyond the level of sort of the civil according with civil law. It's something that is required of every Jewish person to rise beyond plain civility, plain civil law, and to rise to a notion of godliness and holiness. That's it. I mean, what I'm saying now is absolutely, totally evident from the Pesukim. You just look at Parshas Kedoshim, that's what it's talking about. So in order not to fear your fellow, in order not to hate your fellow in your heart, that requires some higher consciousness, some understanding that there's a greater power in the world. It's not just that, you know, in Parshas Mishpatim, it just says the law. If one person hurts another, it's civil law. You know, you can look at Hammurabi's code, you can open all kinds of different laws, and you'll see, you know, well, if A does this to B, then you have to compensate. You know, that's the regular laws of judgment. But in order for a person to become a holy person, that requires what we'll call Yiras Shamayim. That requires a fear of heaven or reverence for that there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the world, and that there's something greater. That I have greater. There's something greater that I am to. I'm not just to get by in society. There's more to my interaction with people than just not injuring them and staying out of trouble. There's also something for me to gain from them, in the sense that when I interact with people, I will in a sense interact with my fear of Hashem. What's happening actually is that when I extend myself and love my fellow as I love myself, I am interacting with that person in the sense they're the impetus for my growth, so to say, right? But really what's happening is that I'm answering to a higher calling, to the fact that there's something greater to be attained from a social interaction than just not hurting the person. This is very simple, very obvious. This is Kedusha, meaning this is where Kedusha begins. Kedusha begins, the concept of Kedusha, sanctity, holiness of the Jewish people, begins with understanding that social interactions have more to offer than just, you know, the guy's in my way, okay, I won't run him over, I'll wait till he crosses the street, then I'll, you know, speed it, you know. No, I appreciate the fact that there's another human being, and I need to empathize with their needs, I need to understand them, and so on. That's Kedusha. So that is Kedusha. Those are the mitzvos be'nada l'chaveru. Kedusha, and this is where I'm going back to Chesed, which was our first topic. Chesed, at the core of Chesed, is Kedusha. If you recall the topics that we've been speaking about and what the themes are, reaching out to another person and actually getting to accomplish a true act of Chesed is something that's not simple. I often quote this Gemara, I quoted it a few times here, I quote it again. The Talmud in Sukkah, page 49, teaches that not anybody who wants to jump at the opportunity to do chesed will be successful. Only someone who truly fears God will be able to persist. You see, because what's going to happen? You're going to try. And the first course, the first level is going to be like, well, I tried to be nice, I have this desire to be kind. It didn't work out. Okay, I'll try again another time. But someone who understands who has a fear of Hashem, then they are, the whole interaction with someone else is higher than just, I'm staying out of trouble, B, I feel like I want to be kind to the other person. It's that I'm persisting in that interaction with, if you will, with Hashem, in my reverence for a greater purpose with interaction with people, that's going to cause me to persist. And if I cleave to that reverence that I hold, and I perfect that reverence that I hold in myself, I develop Kedusha, and Chesed, an opportunity to do a true Chesed, will be gifted to me. I'll be, at the end, it's like the Talmud says about Torah study, Yagata umatzata ta'amin. If a person toils in Torah, truly toils to understand Torah, and they tell you that they found the answer, you should believe them. I mean, a person puts in all the effort when it comes to spiritual matters. A person puts in all the effort, but at the end it's a gift from Hashem. Ultimately, it's a gift from Hashem. Everything is a gift from Hashem. Everything that we put in, it's going to be a gift from Hashem at the end. Here too, the opportunity to do a chesed. Really, it's rising to the level, rising to that, to be successful in the conflict that we have within ourselves, of overcoming not only our laziness, not only our, you know, inhibitions, but also to overcome our superficial initiatives. Our initiatives that are superficial and driven by our plain desires to be a nice guy. I just want to be a nice guy. You know, I'll be nice to them. Doesn't work out, okay, I'll try it again next time. You know, that's to live with greater depth. Chesed comes to people who live with greater depth, who see that social interactions is not just, you know, I'm being a nice guy to the person next to me. Chesed means that I answer to myself, to Hashem, to a higher purpose, to understand that I develop Yiras Shamayim, I develop fear of Hashem when I'm involved in Chesed. I'm fostering, I'm kibbling this Yiras Shamayim as I interact with Chesed. So that is the connection that I would like to suggest, that we're making the bridge from Chesed. Do you remember last week I tried to deliver a difficult message, a hard pill to swallow, so to say? I tried to share that when you're visiting someone who's ill, who's critically ill or, you know, terminally ill, whatever it is, that our role in helping them is to, in supporting them, is to be a vehicle for them to understand the true context, that they're in the limelight with Hashem. They're closer to Hashem. They're, as they go, unfortunately, as a person progresses, or if in a sense deteriorates down the line, a person, it's more evident that a person is dependent on Hashem, totally dependent on Hashem. And what we can do as we visit such a person is highlight that for them in a subtle way, obviously. Now they say, oh, you're totally dependent on Hashem, look at you, you know. They're nothing like that, obviously, God forbid. But what we mean to say is to in a subtle way, to be there to comfort them and to say, you're in a unique position. You have a rare opportunity, so to say. This is a rare experience in human existence, what you have right now. And you'll be unique. No, I'm not going to say that straight out, but we want to support that and cradle that and be in any way that we can help that. What are we doing then in that position? We are helping the person foster Yiras Shamayim. Being at the core of Chesed, right? Or like, I think it was maybe perhaps Elizabeth that pointed out when we were talking about Achnasas Kala, that when you're dancing before the Kala, there's so many other things that are going on. In a sense, what you're doing is you're celebrating the union of the Jewish people with Hashem. Again, you're fostering Yiras Shamayim. You're developing a depth in life. That's what we're doing when we're doing Chesed. Chesed is not just being a nice guy. It's developing a depth of perception of our existence before Hashem. And that is why I'm suggesting, I believe it's perhaps even obvious why the mitzvos of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, the mitzvos of one to their fellow, are in the parsha of Kedoshim. Because to become a Kadosh, a holy person, a person needs to foster via Reisa Melokecha. You should fear Hashem your God, like it says in Parshas Kedoshim. So now we're making the bridge. That's my little introduction. I think it's an important point. So we're making a bridge that in all the mitzvos Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, what we want to, so to say, get out of, in a place to grow in the mitzvah, which is interacting, always associating and relating to someone else, is to be able to identify opportunities for developing Yiras Shamayim in that mitzvah Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, which begins with simple things like empathy, understanding what the person is going through, or not oppressing someone else, or understanding their position, understanding their point of view. These are things that we all do all the time, but the simple point that I'm trying to highlight is that what we can improve on is identifying the opportunities of Yiras Shamayim, a place for us to foster a connection with Hashem in that mitzvah, and not just to be a nice guy, right? To understand that Hashem gave us not only mitzvos bein adam l'makom, mitzvos between us and Hashem, but actually a way to become holy and connected and infused with elements of perfection that will perfect us. The way to do that is to by being cognizant of the Yiras Shamayim aspect, the reverence for Hashem in interaction with others. It's an integral part. So that's where we can all always grow in that part. And now we're making the transition to Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Okay. There's more to talk about. I want to throw out one more piece, even though it's introduction, I want to throw out one more piece that's important about Kedusha and Chesed. I think it's really important because I don't know if I'll get an opportunity to talk about this particular point another time. Maybe I will, but I'd rather do it now. Chesed is the branching out and the doing kindness to others. The danger of chesed is overstepping our bounds and doing kindness with everyone, in every way, at every time. Meaning chesed needs to be restricted. It's kind of an oxymoron because chesed is really there to be extended to others and to branch out and reach out. But we need to know that branching out to the wrong people, or to the wrong people meaning, not that there's something wrong with them, but to the wrong people means to the people that are in a certain position at a certain time and place, or we have a certain other relationship with them, that could be detrimental. And I'll give you a simple example, quick example, and that is the following. We read on Yom Kippur in the afternoon, we all know, we read about the forbidden relationships. Right? We all know that. If a person has, I believe, and I don't have a chumash in front of me, but I'm going to take this off the cuff, and if I get it wrong, I apologize, but I think, maybe you'll correct me, Dr. Arvin, if I get it. But it's a relationship between a brother and a sister, or perhaps an aunt and a nephew. You'll please correct me, okay? It is referred to by the Torah as a chesed. Chesed who? The Torah uses the word chesed to refer to an intimate relationship, a sexual relationship, between relatives. That's one of the that's a term that's used to describe an intimate relationship between relatives. Why is the word chesed being used? It should be used, there's other words like tevel, which means abomination. You know, it's disgusting, it's incest, whatever words you want to use, you know. But why the word chesed? The answer is, it is chesed. Meaning, in a sexual relationship, in an intimate relationship, between two people, there's kindness, there's love, there's giving. But it's giving in the wrong place. Giving in the wrong place is one of the most severe sins. That's giving in the wrong way, in the wrong place. That's what the Torah says. That's chesed. Meaning, it's interesting, the Torah identifies the positive character, but it's basically telling you that chesed is out of line. That's basically what the Torah is saying. That chesed, that act of kindness, is out of line. So chesed, and we can give other examples, but I don't want to belabor the point. The point is that chesed is called chesed anytime, any place, even when it's extended further. But we need to know that there needs to be restrictions to chesed. Restrictions to chesed are called kedusha, meaning safeguarding oneself from overstepping one's bounds. That restriction of maintaining a certain form to one's giving is called kedusha. That's sanctity. One more quick example. I can't hold myself back. But like with the blessings at a wedding, right? We first perform kedushin. Kedushin comes from the word kedusha, sanctity, and we specify God permitted us to marry, but He forbade us those that are prohibited to us, and He permitted us those that are allowed to us through kedushin. So there you have again the word kedusha being used in terms of restriction, and there's many examples. I don't have to bring too many more. The point is, there's a relationship between kedusha and chesed. So I'm highlighting two aspects of that relationship. One aspect is that there needs to be a restriction placed on where and when and how we extend ourselves in chesed. We have to know. In certain ways, it's the correct way, it's the proper way, it's the exalted way. And in certain ways, chesed has its deep end, and you can go off the deep end, and you can plummet, and you can fail through doing too much chesed, or chesed in the wrong place to the wrong people. On the other hand, there's another aspect of relationship of kedusha and chesed, and that is that when you do the true chesed, then you will attain kedusha, because kedusha is a byproduct of becoming elevated in the physical world, gaining a new higher perspective through doing the mitzvah of chesed. So these are the two relationships that I can see in kedusha and chesed, and that's where we're going now to the mitzvos of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, how the Torah is pinpointing us to certain activities that particularly relate to kedusha. That's where we're going. Okay, another quick comment, and that is that I encourage you to learn the content with me. We're going to be looking at the original text of the mitzvah. I encourage you to, participate and, point out something that you see as an interesting point or something that's relevant you want to share. Please do so. It will enhance all of our learning. Especially when we look at original sources, we want to look at what the word means a little bit. We're going to try to do some textual study. Okay. The mitzvah of timely compensation. We may not complete the topic tonight, and that's fine. We can always continue it next time on some level. We're going to begin tonight. So there are two sources. The first is in Parshas Kedoshim. Do you have the yeah?
No, I don't have the back.
I'm sorry?
She doesn't have a back.
Oh, I'm sorry. Which one do you have? Sorry. Good? Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. So the mitzvah appears in two places in the Torah, and there are actually variations as to what the Torah says about the mitzvah. Okay? So first it's in Parshas Kedoshim, and like many mitzvos of the Torah introduces the mitzvah in one of the first four books of the Torah. Usually in the second, third, and fourth book of the Torah. Shmot, Vayikra, and Bamidbar. And very often, with many mitzvos are repeated in the last book, in the book of Devarim. This is no exception. Okay? But let's see the variations between the two. Okay. So, the first pasuk, the first on the right, top right, is from Vayikra 19. It says the following. Lo ta'ashok et re'acha. Don't oppress your friend. Velo tigzol. And do not rob him. Lo talin pe'ulat sachir itcha ad boker. Do not withhold the wages of your hired worker with you until morning. So how many directives do we have in this pasuk? How many directives do we have in the pasuk? How many things is the Torah telling us? What do you say, Danny?
Three.
We have three. What are they? Number one, do not oppress your friend. We have to understand what that means. Number two, the Torah says, do not rob him. And number three, do not withhold the wages of a hired worker with you until morning. Okay? So from this little pasuk, right over here, this context, let me ask you a question. What does it mean? I throw out information to you, and that is, the Torah says elsewhere, not to steal and not to rob. Actually, the verse right before it, it says, Lo tignovu, do not steal. The verse, it's not on the page, but the verse that actually precedes it says, Lo tignovu, do not steal. And over here, and we have another verse that says, Lo tigzol. Actually, this is a verse where it says, Lo tigzol, but it does prohibit us from robbing in other places. And here, again, we have the Lo tigzol. So my question to you is, what's a connection? Can someone loop a connection together between the three directives that the Torah is giving? What's the connection between oppressing your friend, which is a little bit vague, what oppressing means, and then do not rob him, and then we have the third one, which is very clear, not to withhold wages until the morning. So what's the connection? Can someone loop the three together? I know that I'm just getting you to think. That's all.
By withholding his wages till morning, you're both oppressing and stealing from him. You're definitely oppressing him. And in a sense, you're stealing from him because he's supposed to have it now. You're taking it away from him now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, definitely true. By withholding something that's rightfully coming to someone, even though it's not in their possession yet, even though they don't have it, but they worked to be compensated.
How about if you ask him, can I pay you tomorrow?
Okay, that's a good question. We'll talk about that. Let's just try to understand the text. But that's a good point. We're going to have to talk about that.
Okay.
That's very important. So whether or not a person can have something, I could walk up and snatch it from them, or a person, in a sense, there's something I'm obligated to that person. And by withholding it, what I understand you're saying, it's tantamount to going up and snatching it from them.
Mm-hmm.
What difference does it make if I go up and snatch it from them? Or if I have something in my pocket that is kind of like being pulled from my pocket to them, and I'm holding it back. You know, I'm restraining it from returning to them. In both cases, I'm like stealing from them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Any other comments on this?
It's giving you a different definition of robbery.
Right. Expanding our definitions. I would have thought that robbing only means to take from someone else. Comes the Torah and teaches that even when I withhold something from someone, it's in my possession, but it's coming to the person, that is stealing. We wouldn't have thought that necessarily. I would have thought maybe only when I take something from someone. Not when I withhold it. And even, the Torah is so strict, even when I withhold it only until the morning, I'll pay him tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
That's also stealing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's really extreme, right? I would never have thought that. Okay, maybe withholding something forever from someone else, that's stealing. But withholding something for 24 hours, or let's say for 12 hours from someone, that's stealing? I'll pay it tomorrow. What's the big deal? No. Maybe the person is desperate, or even if the person is not desperate, they could still use the extra cash or whatever it is, the extra goods, whatever you're supposed to deliver to them, and you're withholding that. That's stealing. At that time, you're stealing.
So is an oppression stealing too?
Oppression. So
could be a form of stealing.
Okay, so yeah, what do you mean when you say oppression? I know the Pasuk says oppression. What? How do you understand oppression? What?
Well, when you don't let your friends, you oppress somebody, you're not letting them do what they're, you know, could be doing, or you prevent them from doing what they could be doing. So in essence, you're stealing. You're stealing from what they could be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You're stealing from their success, whatever it is. It's in essence a form of, you know, stealing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
That's really kind of expanding. If you start from the bottom, with don't, you know, pay them, don't withhold wages, don't rob, don't oppress, is kind of expanding the into the higher level.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes the connection between God and this little thing that you want to do makes you think more about it than doing why it's not okay.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to note that there are other verses in the Torah about abuse, if you will, physical abuse and verbal abuse to another person. There's Torah prohibition against hitting another Jew, and there's a Torah prohibition against abusing, verbally abusing another Jew. And I say, it's a slightly different topic, it's a little going off track, why I say another Jew as opposed to another person, and I want to address that as well in a moment, but let's just put that on the side, let's shelve that for a second. But there are other verses that talk about physically and verbally abusing. And here the Torah still comes and says, do not oppress. You know, so what is the Torah? It's very vague. And I find it really interesting that that the discussion here is also revolving around that, you know, the more specific statement is the first one. Would have been better if it would have said, like, do not withhold the wages of a hired worker with you until morning, do not rob him, and do not oppress him. Mm-hmm. You know, if it said, like, backward. Right? But it starts from the general and it goes down to the specific. Why do you think that is? Why is it that what's your opinion? What do you think that, why is the Torah, you know, starting with, Rachel, if you were to teach this, yeah? How would you start? Would you start with teaching the specific case first and then expanding the definition? Or would you start with the general definition and you start with the general definition? Okay, but is the general definition being redefined as we go through the verse, or are there wider definitions to oppressing your fellow and stealing from your fellow, and then we're just giving a particular? Because it says in other places not to verbally and physically abuse another Jew, and it says in another verse not to steal, and yet the Torah repeats it over here in connection with not delaying a person's payment.
Well, maybe the oppression is the going in order of, you know, the worst thing, and then going to the specific. Like, to oppress can mean so many, it's more than just one thing, you know, so it's kind of saying how bad it is to oppress a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're putting that top on the top.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing that they're mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's going in order.
Mm-hmm.
Of what, according to the Torah, is a terrible thing, a medium thing, and a specific thing.
When you say specific, you mean less severe, or you just mean it's more specific?
More specific, like the withholding. Uh-huh. If all of a sudden it's going from oppression to, mm-hmm, withholding wages. That's like so specific.
Mm-hmm.
But robbing, I mean, when he talks about robbing, is that like monetary robbing? Because withholding wages is monetary.
Right.
Robbing is monetary, maybe.
Right.
Oppressing is monetary also.
Okay, so that's an interesting point as well. Yeah. So, you know, it kind of sheds light on the beginning of the verse. Oppressing here doesn't mean you're holding the guy down and trying to break his arm. It means that, you know, there's some monetary relationship here where you're oppressing them through money. In some way, they're feeling abused monetarily. You know, it's not physical or verbal abuse. It's financial abuse. You know, that in some way they're financially abusing you, right? That's okay.
Well, you said that it says it in other places.
Yes.
So the Torah could be saying, you know, I've told you before, don't oppress and don't steal.
Uh-huh.
But that's not only what you think it is.
Right.
Not just the obvious,
right,
oppressing and stealing. You might have thought oppressing and stealing is just the obvious,
right,
oppressing and stealing. But it even means even something as subtle as holding back the wages is also oppressing and stealing.
Right.
Is that what we've been saying?
Yeah. For what it's worth, human cognition works best when you have, you learn a new piece of information, you've got something to stick it to that you already know. Like if
bring a previous learning first, you know,
yeah,
and then connect it to that previous learning.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, I want to make another interesting note. I think our collective wisdom over here really solves the puzzle, but I have another important point I think to make, and that is the following. The first two statements, really more the first and a little bit the second, emphasize the deficit for the victim. Do not oppress your fellow. It doesn't say like, don't withhold the funds or whatever. You know, do not oppress your fellow. Do not rob from them. Right? And then it tells you, do not, you know, withhold the wages. Meaning, be cognizant of the oppression that you're imposing on the other person. Do not rob from them. And how would I be robbing from them? No, like, I'm just connecting all the dots over here, that by withholding the funds, you've been oppressing them. Meaning, and that's why it's wrong. Meaning, it's not just, I'm just withholding the funds until tomorrow, I didn't take from them. Meaning, I didn't injure the person because I didn't take from them, and all I am is holding on to the funds. No. You know why it's bad? Because you're oppressing them by holding back the funds. Meaning the Torah is picking up on, the Torah is emphasizing to us and speaking to us directly and saying, empathize with the deficit of this, you know, employee. Right? I mean, you would have thought that only directly coming up to the person and taking away what they have injures, you know, damages, abuses that other person because you took away their property. Says the Torah, no. Don't oppress someone. You're like, how am I oppressing someone? Don't steal. How am I stealing? Don't keep the wages. I.e., by keeping the wages, that's what you're doing. You're oppressing that person. So it's fascinating that the Torah, the direction that the Torah takes in speaking to the human being about how to relate to others, the Torah begins with this is just another point to add here, is that it's speaking to the fact that we should be aware of the other person. The other person's, again, this brings us into the connection to chesed. Be aware of the other person's, needs. You know, and how that makes that person feel, and therefore don't do it. Even though you're not taking from the person, and therefore you're not really stealing, but because you're oppressing them, therefore you're stealing. For a different reason you're stealing, because you're oppressing them. It's a different form of stealing. You see, it's a different reason why you're stealing. You're right. Going up to the person and taking from them, that's straight out stealing. So this really, according to that definition, it's not stealing. But because you're injuring them, you're oppressing them, that's the theft. It's in a sense like, if you will, like the stress that you put on them, that's what you're stealing from them.
Stealing when you're calm and you're relaxed.
Their serenity.
Yeah, taking away their mm-hmm.
Their stability.
Their
serenity. Their nachas ruach. Taking away their serenity. You're creating trauma for them, and that is the theft. That is the theft. You only pay them when you pay them in the morning. It's true. You have it already. So you're going to pay them in the morning. So it's not really stealing. No, but because they're going through oppression during that period, then you're stealing from them. You're taking away their serenity. Right? Okay. Yes.
You say the third one is connected to the first one, to not oppress your friends. Is there a reason why in the first one they specify like your friend, and then they say the hired worker?
No, I understand. Meaning it should say either your friend the whole time or hired worker the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, don't oppress.
Yeah.
Or
why is there two different...
Okay, that's a great question. So I was also troubled by that question. And other people that I've spoken with are troubled by that, and I haven't seen anyone address it. The only thing that I could say is the following, and that is, we're going to see in just a moment, maybe it's a very good progression for us to go to the next verse, and that is that this pasuk begins to talk about oppressing re'acha, and this is where actually I want to address this point about a Jew, you know, that do not oppress re'acha. Re'acha means your friend. That's what it means. A good definition is re'acha is your friend, right? I want to explain actually the word re'acha for a moment, if you don't mind, to go a little bit. The word re'a is related to another word that we know. I'm going to get through your answer, okay? But I have to make a big circle first. So the word re'a is related to the word ra. We know the word ra means bad. Why is the word re'a like the word ra? Friend and bad in English are totally not connected, hopefully. But, you know, with friends like this, who needs enemies, you know? But you know, re'a and ra, you know, how are they connected, re'a and ra? The answer is they're very much the same word. How is that? Here we are. Because the word ra actually does not mean bad. The word ra means broken. Broken. That's what it means. It's an extension of the word broken, means something good that's dysfunctional, if you will, like a dysfunctional good becomes bad. It's like spoiled, right? Re'a, ra, they're all related, it means broken. How is a friend connected to the word broken? Because I am me. And in order for me to have a friend, I need to, so to say, break my ego, or break my cocoon, you know, break into myself, and open place in my heart for another human being. Right? I need to start caring about somebody else. When I care about someone else, he's my friend. Because I've broken something within me to accommodate someone else. I start thinking about the person. I start being concerned, or, you know, I desire or concern about the other person. There's an attachment that within me, there's like this growth coming out to someone else. He's my friend. Because I've broken up or taken up space within my heart to allow for someone else to enter. That's a friend. That's why it's re'acha. Okay, so a Jew is referred to in the Torah, one of the terms is, you know, achicha, your brother, and this is all kinds of terms. One of the terms is re'acha, your friend. Specifically here, we can appreciate that. That don't oppress your re'acha, because he's, meaning this, look at the fellow Jew, he's your friend, i.e., you should have space in your heart to accommodate his desires. Don't oppress someone who's directly associated with you and should have accommodations for their concerns in your heart. That's what the word re'acha means over here. Don't oppress your re'acha. Now, why? So now I'm getting to your answer. So why does it talk about re'acha over here? Because when the mitzvah was introduced to the Jewish people, it was introduced with association to the fellow Jew. Okay, I don't want to go as far as to make a sociological commentary on the way the Jews behaved when they came out of Egypt and how they were when they were going into Israel. I'll let maybe someone else do such a thing. Okay, that's not really my style so much. But for whatever reasons, when the mitzvah was introduced, it was introduced to the clan, to the group. Do not oppress your fellow. As we're going to go through it, we're going to see that the next verse actually refers indiscriminately relates to any worker. You hire a Gentile worker, not Jewish, do not oppress them. That it also relates later. But that's only at a later stage. That's 40 years after they got the mitzvah was expanded. So the answer to your question is that the mitzvah begins by talking about the fellow Jew. And then talks about holding over the wages of any worker, which allows for room for the expansion of the mitzvah. God forbid, I don't mean that Moshe on his own, I don't mean that in any way, that Moshe expanded the mitzvah on his own later, just that there is one consensus that the mitzvah is being taught and developed, God forbid, not developed by Moshe, but being taught and introduced to the Jewish people. Perhaps it's a suggestion, and I hate to go on record saying these things because it really, these are things that I should not be saying on my own, but it's just in a way of suggestion, you know, for you to think about. But one suggestion is that Moshe Rabbeinu introduced it to the Jewish people in the restricted fashion first, and then it was more fleshed out toward the end of his life. Not to say that this wasn't all given to Moshe in the beginning. It was all given to Moshe at Sinai. All the mitzvos, the Torah states explicitly that all the mitzvos were given to Moshe at Sinai. Just that Moshe's teaching to the Jewish people, it came out in stages to the Jewish people so that it would be adapted and kind of developed. And that's my suggestion to explain the transition in the verses, why it starts with Re'acha. So it ends with the worker. But it speaks in the beginning about Re'acha, and that's going to be expanded in the next verse in Devarim, which is stated at Moshe's, at the end of Moshe's life. Okay, it's 5 to 9. I have about 5 minutes left. I want us to just read the second verse, and maybe we'll have a short discussion, very brief discussion about it, and we'll come back to this topic next time. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Okay, let's go to the next verse. This next verse is in Devarim 24. Says the following: Lo ta'ashok sachir, do not oppress a hired worker, ani ve'evyon, who is either poor or destitute. Evyon means that he's even more than poor. A poor person has a few meals for the week. A destitute person will eat anything that's off the street. He needs anything. He's desperate. He's a desperately poor person. Me'achecha, from your brethren, Jewish person, O migercha asher be'artzecha bishareha, or from your ger, which either means convert, or also is to include someone who is a Noachide, a Gentile who adopts the 7 Noachide laws, a ger toshav, who lives in the land of Israel. Okay, so it's expanded over here from your brethren, if you will, your brothers, to adopt, include also a Gentile who has adopted the 7 Noahide laws. Okay? Biyomo titein scharo. This is a new statement we've never seen before. On his day, you shall give him his wage. Velo tavo alav hashemesh. We haven't heard this yet. And don't let the sun set upon him. In the first verse, we learned about the fact that you should don't have the wage until the morning. Now we're saying, don't let the sun even set. Okay? Ki anihu, because he's poor. Ve'ilav hu noset nafsho, and to it, to the wage, he lifts his soul. He's like hoping for the money. He worked for 5 hours. You know, he worked for whatever amount of money, $20 an hour, whatever it is, and now he's finally going to come to payment? Don't let even the sun set without paying him. Look at this last part. Astonishing. V'lo yikra alecha el Hashem, and let him not call out concerning you to Hashem. V'haya v'chachet, and it'll be within you a sin. There'll be a failing. You will falter. You will sin on this accord. If the guy goes home and he's nothing to eat because you didn't pay him, the guy's waiting for his wage, and he crawls into bed hungry, and he can't fall asleep because his stomach is growling, and he starts to cry to Hashem. Yeah, like my imagery. He starts to cry to Hashem. Not mine. It's the pasuk. He starts to cry to Hashem because he cannot fall asleep, and his kids are crying because they need food. And he says, "That guy, you know, he didn't pay me." And he cries to Hashem. You know, Hashem should curse you. He starts to pray to Hashem. Hashem will take issue with you more stricter for this. Amazing statement. It's absolutely perplexing to me. I just want to throw it out as a point of discussion. Maybe this only point, if you don't mind, we just have a few minutes. So I'll throw it out as a point of discussion. What is the climax of this event? And there'll be a sin within you. Well, that's perplexing. Obviously, you're a terrible person, so to say, right? You held back the wage. I mean, what's the oomph? The whole pasuk is building up to the fact that there'll be a sin within you. What's going on? What's the Torah teaching us by finishing off the pasuk that way? What is the Torah teaching us? Obviously, there'll be the Rashi and the commentaries based on the Talmud. They all explain you're a sinner even if he doesn't cry to Hashem. You didn't pay him on time. You're a sinner even if he doesn't cry to Hashem. But if he cries to Hashem, how much more so are you a sinner? So that's the simple reading of the text. But nevertheless, there's an emphasis over here.
Well, you're not only hurting him, you're hurting yourself.
You're hurting yourself.
Yeah.
Right, that's what it's saying. And here we see the point that I was trying to bring up actually loops back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the class, which is, if you go through this process, the guy goes home, he crawls into bed, he's starving, he can't fall asleep, he cries to Hashem about you, you missed an enormous opportunity. You are deficient. Chet means that it's a shortfall. That's what the word chet means. You fell short of your ability in this case. You could, this guy's poor. Great, you employed him. Fantastic. What's better than to employ a Jew who's needy? That's the biggest form of chesed, of tzedakah. You don't pay him. You drop the ball. The guy goes home. He's starving. He can't fall asleep. He's crying to Hashem. You are deficient. You fell short of what you're capable of doing. Namely, the mitzvah of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro has a deeper purpose. You could have attained a very noble level with your actions of simply paying him on time. And because you didn't pay him on time, that's a very evident shortfall on your part. That's what the Torah is saying. See the beauty of it? It's embedded in the Torah right over here. We see it. That's what the message is. And the climax is, you know, use your mitzvah to hit a noble, high level, and don't allow yourself to miss the opportunity.